The opinions and views expressed in Dead Men Do Tell Tales and all affiliated media are Jordan and Nicole's and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of their training program or others working in the field of medico-legal death investigation. Hey everyone.
Welcome to Dead Men Do Tell Tales,
a podcast about forensic pathology related topics.
I'm Nicole Kroom.
And I'm Jordan Taylor.
And we're both pathology residents who are going into forensic pathology.
And today we decided we're going to talk about all things involving earth and natural earth related deaths. And while doing that, today we're drinking Teeling Whiskey, their single grain Irish whiskey. Nicole for Christmas got me a series of three whiskeys, and so we are sharing and enjoying them together today. Or at least the first one. Maybe the second one. We'll see. So, earth is kind of this broad category that involves a lot of things, but we're going to kind of go over some general stuff. Okay, so the first thing that I think of when I think about the earth trying to kill you is earthquakes. I have kind of very brief stuff on earthquakes because it's a huge topic. Earthquakes are pretty much, you know, the surface of the earth shaking, and that's resulting from a sudden release of energy in the earth's lithosphere that creates these seismic waves that go out. And then, of course, because of this earthquake, there's a lot of things that happen because of it, including soil liquefaction, landslides, fires, tsunamis, floods, and of course the human impacts, which are physical injuries to human and loss of life, as well as property damage, building collapse, and then diseases and stuff that can filter from that.
Mm.
The deadliest earthquake was in 1556.
1556.
They have records from that. They do. This is actually crazy. It's in, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but Shanxi, China. Shaanxi, Shanxi. And apparently more than 830,000 people died in this earthquake.
Wow.
So almost a million people. And essentially they had houses that were carved on the hillside.
Oh.
And then there was an earthquake and then all these houses collapsed and everybody died from collapse injury. And this is actually the third deadliest natural disaster of all time after two floods that we'll talk about in later episodes. In the 20th century, a little more recently, was the, again in China, the Tangshan earthquake, which they guesstimate 240 to 655,000 people died from. And that was in 1976.
Mm.
And then in this century, in 2010, there was an earthquake in Haiti where 316,000 people died.
Yeah.
So obviously most earthquakes don't result in any deaths, let alone hundreds of thousands of deaths. But when you have these high magnitude earthquakes in areas that are really not stable with not great
infrastructure,
construction, yes, and a large concentration of people, you can get a lot of deaths. And then on the other kind of side of this, the largest earthquake on the Richter scale was the 1960 Chilean earthquake that was apparently a 9.5 on the Richter scale. Yeah. And then, of course, being in San Francisco, the big thing that we hear about is the 1906 earthquake. And this hit Northern California at around 5 in the morning on Wednesday, April 18th, with a magnitude of 7.9. And there was the first shock, and then there was another aftershock after it. And around 3,000 people died, and 80% of the city of San Francisco was completely destroyed.
Huh. I would have thought the number of casualties would have been higher.
I don't think
based
that
on everything that I've heard about it.
Yeah, I don't think that it was particularly populated at the time.
Mm, that makes
sense.
And
also the buildings weren't as tall. So I think a lot of it is just luck, unfortunately. Yeah. Luck or bad luck. Bad luck.
Unfortunately, probably wouldn't be the same nowadays. They keep telling us we're expecting the big one any day.
Yeah, no, it's gonna, bad things are gonna happen. And the big thing with that one, with the 1905 earthquake, of course, was all the fires that started roaring through the city after this. And really a large chunk of the city was destroyed from fire more than from, I think, the actual collapse itself. And apparently it was about $400 million in damage from that earthquake. And that was in, you know, 1905 money. Oh, yeah. Which actually this, luckily, $11.4 billion today. $11.4 billion.
No, that's ridiculous.
And then the last thing I have on earthquakes was just kind of fun. now we know that earthquakes are caused by, you know, our tectonic plates moving and grinding against each other and causing these waves, seismic waves. But before, what people used to think caused earthquakes was a whole different, like, different mythologies. No. So I have three different mythologies of things that caused earthquakes. So the first of which is the Norse god Loki, who's the god of mischief and strife. And
also known as Tom Hiddleston.
Also known as Tom Hiddleston. So apparently Loki obviously is kind of the worst. And he was placed in prison, essentially. And they placed a serpent above him with the venom dripping down, and his wife was supposed to be catching it in this bowl. Sigyn was his wife, and apparently then she would have to empty it, but while she was emptying it, venom would drip down onto Loki, and then he would be writhing in pain. And when he writhed in pain, apparently that's what the earthquake was caused by. Whoa. So because his wife wasn't protecting him with this bowl, because she was emptying it, he would cause earthquakes. In Greek mythology, Poseidon, apparently, when he was in the bad mood, would strike the ground with his trident and cause earthquakes. Also, he would punish people with earthquakes.
That's why he needs to stick to the sea. Leave us landlubbers alone, please.
He wants everything. The sea is most of the earth. He wants all of it. And then finally, in Japanese mythology, Namazu is this giant catfish that when the god Kashima let his guard fall, would thrash around causing earthquakes.
Oh.
So a catfish caused it because he was let free.
I really like that one.
Which I really liked. So that was just kind of a fun little... Earthquakes are horrible, but before we knew what they were. So in terms of death associated with earthquakes, it's mainly from all of these other effects around it, be it physical crush injuries, fires that are caused by it, disease that breaks out from lack of infrastructure and proper sewage and that type of thing around earthquakes.
Yeah.
And of course, that would be a demort, mass casualty type response to something like that.
Yes.
And then one of the side effects of earthquakes are landslides. So landslides count as either stone and rock coming down, mudslides count, rock slides count, and rock slides are different because they're actual chunks of rock and not just dirt and debris. And then avalanches can be considered a type of landslide. Mm. In the U.S., about 25 to 50 people are killed each year from landslides.
Oh.
And in this category, there was a recent avalanche in Tahoe in which two people were killed, which was the weekend before, or the day before we went out to Tahoe over MLK Day.
And then you decided to go skiing anyway?
I was at a different mountain. It was, I think it was Alpine Meadows. Two skiers died in an avalanche, which is one of the squaw resorts. So 25 to 50 in the U.S. and worldwide, thousands of people die a year from landslides. Health threats from these landslides are obviously the rapid moving water and debris. And then, of course, broken electrical, water, gas, and sewage lines that you're then exposed to.
Yeah.
Not dissimilar from earthquakes, but they're pretty well tied. And then they also mentioned disrupted roadways, railways, and whatnot that can endanger motorists, which I hadn't really thought of, but it makes sense. There's this interesting interactive map the USGS has out.
U.S. Geological Survey?
U.S. Geological Survey. Where they show where landslides have happened in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find really interesting about it, and we'll link to this on the website, is you can see that some states are better at reporting data than others because there's some very distinct lines drawn. You can see in New Mexico that there's a very distinct box around the corner where it meets the four corner states.
Right.
Like the other ones just don't really report anything except the high likelihood ones.
Yeah.
Versus they report a lot more of the low likelihood ones. And
oh, no!
A lot of the landslides are centered kind of on the West Coast.
Oh, no.
And then through the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah.
Which is not too surprising. But they do a pretty good job of showing it, and we'll link to that on the website. And then there were a couple of quick landslides that I wanted to highlight just to show the extent to which landslides can be devastating.
Mm-hmm.
In 1996 in Yosemite Valley, there was a landslide near the Happy Isles Trailhead. 162,000 tons of rock and debris fell. They fell at over 160 miles per hour.
Whoa.
12 campers, hikers were involved and one died. The force of the impact just from this landslide was the equivalent of a 2.15 magnitude earthquake. And there was this giant dust cloud that formed.
Yeah.
That apparently blocked out the sun for 6 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of insane. And a lot of landslides and that type of thing happen after other natural disasters.
Yeah.
Obviously, I mentioned earthquakes earlier.
So just the cherry on top of the...
Exactly. So in Montecito, California, in an area that had been burned by the Thomas wildfire, which at that point was the largest wildfire in California, they then had heavy rain that fell on that land. And then there was this giant landslide that killed 23 people, injured 176, and damaged 400 homes. This was early January 2018 in Montecito, California.
Wow.
So it's kind of like, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, yeah.
And then specifically, there's a lot of things that you can use to try to prevent these earth slides, I guess I should say, from happening. You can use wire meshing to hold up rock. Retaining walls oftentimes are in there to prevent landslides. And then there's different things like soil nailing and rock bolting, where you put long bolts through the ground and that can stabilize the soil or the rock. But yeah, so earthquakes and then turning into landslides or landslides from other things are kind of some of the things I think of when I think of natural disasters that happen on Earth to kill you.
Yeah.
And Cole is climbing around, so any noises, jingling bells, likely her.
She's pretty active today.
I tried to tire her out. My kitten likes to play fetch, so I don't know how much of a dog she is, but we played fetch for a solid half an hour.
I mean, she did grow up around 3 dogs.
That's true. Although, did they play fetch?
One of them likes fetch.
Okay.
The other two like cuddling under comforters.
That is not cool.
Yeah. Anti-cold. Yes. Yeah, so when I think about earth deaths, I definitely think about earthquakes, but one of my biggest fears is being trapped in tiny spaces. So that's fair. I also think about cave-ins being stuck underground.
Okay,
so
fair.
Most of the research that I did was on caving,
okay,
which is defined as underground exploration. And it's actually evolved into these very complex excursions that are going deeper and deeper into unexplored terrain. Because I didn't know this, but there are a ton of caves in the U.S. In Virginia alone, there are 4,378 documented caves.
Huh.
And only a little over 1,000 of them have been mapped. So there's of unexplored underground terrain that people way more adventurous than I enjoy visiting. So roughly 2 million people in the U.S. visit caves each year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I thought deaths associated with caving tied in really well to a previous episode we did on strangulation. We focused on strangulation in that episode, but strangulation falls under this broader category of asphyxia deaths.
Yes.
So a lot of deaths associated with caving have to do with a different type of category under asphyxiation, and that is suffocation.
Yeah.
So in terms of suffocation with caving deaths, you get things like entrapment,
yes,
which is when people get trapped in airtight or relatively airtight spaces, and then they have sufficient oxygen initially, but then they exhaust their supply.
Oh, right.
And then there's also environmental suffocation. So that's where they enter this area within the cave that just has a lack of oxygen to begin with. Not necessarily that they kind of use it all up. Like when somebody is buried alive, they'll use it all up. But yeah, they just go so far underground that they enter a place that doesn't have adequate oxygen. Another form of suffocation involves gases that you can encounter when you're underground. Those cause the displacement of oxygen. So things like methane,
yes,
pockets. So that can be another cause of death when you are caving. And then mechanical or positional asphyxia, okay, are also common in these caving incidents. So mechanical pressure on the outside of the body that prevents you from respirating. Something like a boulder falling on top of you. Oops. Versus positional, where you get trapped in a restricted space and then you also can't expand your lungs. In general, these are all the different ways in which people commonly fall victim when they are caving. And I found this really interesting study that was published in 2012. They looked at data from 1980 to 2008 to see what exactly was causing the most caving incidents and to look at the demographics of different victims of caving.
Okay.
And then also fatalities. So in terms of demographics, there were 877 incidents reported during the time frame that they were looking at, which involved 1,356 different individuals. And maybe unsurprisingly, about 70% of those were male.
Okay.
So yep. More not males surprising. Compared to females. And then more young people. So the 10 to 29 age range accounted for almost 40% of victims. Although 47.9% didn't have an age reported. Which is a very large number.
Huh.
And in terms of fatalities, 6% of individuals during the study period died as a result of caving. So it was about 3 deaths per year.
Okay.
And actually, water-related incidents and caver falls tied for the highest percentage of deaths. So people get trapped in these caves and then inclement weather happens unexpectedly and they get flooded, flooded and trapped, which,
that's something I have later too.
Yeah.
Not on caving, but yeah.
And then a small but not insignificant number also succumb to medical disease. So people who have cardiac illness and then they go caving, they can die, and that's considered part of like the caving related fatalities. And then also, as we talked about in a different episode, hypothermia causes a significant number of caving related fatalities.
I looked into a little bit of rock climbing, so kind of parallel to that.
Yeah,
it's another, again, you know, quote-unquote extreme sport. Apparently there's 30 deaths per year in North America, which extrapolates about 150 deaths per year worldwide. But something like 5 million people climb pretty regularly in America. So 30 out of 5 million is super insignificant. So it happens, but it's really uncommon.
Yeah.
And of course, when it does happen, it makes the news because, oh my God. A lot of what I saw was, you know, it depends on the equipment you have, where you're climbing. Because if you're climbing, you know, where a lot of people are climbing, you're going to get help pretty quickly. But if you're somewhere really remote or climbing alone.
Right.
Then it's more likely to have issues. Weather matters, like you said, hypothermia. So if you're doing ice climbing versus rock climbing, like it really, there's a lot of factors that go into it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is a lot of these incidents are self-reported. And I wasn't sure if it was the same with caving, but like, you know, people have to say, oh, I was rock climbing when, you know, X happened or whatever. So a lot of these deaths and injuries and whatnot are not as well researched, it sounded like, from what I got to.
Yeah, it sounded like before this study, they hadn't been well researched. Yeah. There's this national, and this is one of my new favorite words, speleological society.
What does that mean?
Speleology is the scientific study of caves.
Cool.
Yes. So there's a national speleological society.
Next time you play Scrabble.
Right. Yes. And so they kind of keep track of all of the different caving incidents, but they'd never compiled all the data into one epidemiologic study.
I couldn't find any good, like, hardcore studies on this.
Maybe because there's no national insert scientific study of rock climbing.
It's true. It's true.
Society.
And then there were safety tips that they mentioned, like wear a helmet. Double check your, it says notes, but I meant knots. Practice safe rappelling and use a stopper knot. So just like the basic safety stuff, don't boulder super high. I think it was like above 10 meters. Bouldering above 10 meters is super unsafe. They're not able to catch your head.
Tell people where you are.
Tell people where you are. Like just basic safety stuff.
Yeah. 187 hours. Such a traumatic move.
Such a traumatic movie. It's actually one of the things that made me think of rock climbing. So when I think of other natural disasters, like what can happen in the world? Like what can Earth do to you on its own? One of the things I thought of was trees falling on you.
If a tree falls on a person.
And nobody hears it.
Does that count as an accidental death?
It does. I would count it as a natural death.
Oh, natural or accidental?
I mean, in theory, it's natural in the sense of like Earth, nature and Earth.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I mean. Not like natural for our means.
Okay.
Not natural for manner, but natural for like in nature.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there are 250 billion trees in the U.S.
And who went around counting all of those
trees? I don't want to know. And I saw that over 100 people die every year in the U.S. from trees falling on them.
100?
100. So in...
So more people than rock climbing.
More people than rock climbing. And again, these numbers I don't trust as much as I have with other things. So in 2009, there was a jogger, Mary Catherine Ledaney, who was running through a park in Pennsylvania, and she was killed by a fallen 30-foot branch, which is like a tree. Like a tree fell off a tree and hit her.
That's not funny, but it's kind of funny the way that you said it.
She had a head injury, a broken neck, a compound fracture of the right leg. When I was in college, there was a girl in my sorority who was walking home and was walking by one of the main dorms, Baker, and a branch fell off a tree and landed on her and she broke her hip.
Really?
Yeah. It was a giant branch. But it's one of those things that you don't think of until there's some reason for you to think of, right? Because I was exposed to it in college, it was always just like, that almost killed her. A tree almost killed her.
Yeah.
But yeah. And it does... No, I mean, if you think about all of the, because like on your own property, you'll maintain stuff. You see something dying and you maintain it. But out in everywhere, it's not necessarily going to happen.
Like, you know, Golden Gate Park used to be my favorite place in the city. So thanks for making me want to stay inside even more.
And finally on that, Lucy, who is the earliest human ancestor, earliest currently known human ancestor, they think that she might have died from falling out of a tree. She died from falling from a height, and they think it might be a tree that she fell out of and died. And the last two that I have that are the world trying to kill you, quicksand. So you have sand that's saturated in water, and it becomes this like non-Newtonian fluid, and you can sink into it and get trapped. Now, you don't sink all the way down like you do in like the Wild West movies where it goes and covers your head. But you can get trapped in such a way that like you can't get out.
Yeah.
And if you're by yourself, you can get stranded and you can die of all the natural things we talked about.
Yeah.
If the tide comes in, you can get covered and you can get drowned, which is what we talked about. Mm-hmm, I couldn't find any numbers on how many people die every year from quicksand, but there are definitely cases reported of people dying from getting trapped in quicksand and not being able to get out.
So not just a thing in cartoons.
Not just a thing in cartoons, except slightly different than cartoons. Like just your hat isn't left above the top of this. And then finally, sinkholes. So these are depressions or holes in the ground that are caused by some form of collapse of the surface layer.
Oh, these are terrifying.
So terrifying. They range from 1 to 600 meters in diameter and depth.
Nope.
600 meters.
No.
That's more than 6 football fields.
No.
Across and deep.
Pass. Hard pass.
And then, of course, these are deaths, you know, fall, crush injuries, drowning if there's water at the bottom, exposure, starvation. But just some of the weird stuff that happens to the earth that we might come across someday.
Yeah. So my story is kind of what inspired me to focus so much on caving. It's about the Nutty Putty Cave.
Nutty Putty.
Yep.
Nutty Putty.
Which is a fantastic name. And Nutty Putty Cave is located in Utah. It was discovered in 1960 by Dale Green, and he named it Nutty Putty because of the clay found in most of the narrow tunnels.
Hmm.
Yep. So on November 24th, 2009, 26-year-old University of Virginia medical student John Edward Jones took off with a crew of 10 other people to navigate the recesses of Nutty Putty Cave.
The recesses.
He left behind his pregnant wife and their 13-month-old daughter.
Aww.
And spoiler alert, he would never see them again.
Never would have guessed.
Yeah. So John Edward Jones had actually grown up in Utah, and he used to go on caving expeditions with his father and brother throughout his childhood, but it had been a few years since his last caving trip when he went on this expedition on November 24th. So the group he was with was given special permission to enter the cave from the local chapter of the National Speleological Society.
Okay. Which you had to throw it in there again.
I did have to throw that word in there again. I needed to prove that I could say difficult words sometimes.
I have learned to say anisopoikilocytosis this month,
yeah,
which is the variation in size and shape of red blood cells.
Right.
And it took me all month to be able to say the word and not trip over myself. It's my one, like, crowning accomplishment.
Congratulations, gold stars for you.
Tenue and speleological, which is also impossible.
So this local chapter weighed applications and then granted access to the caves based on experience.
Okay.
And Nutty Putty is considered a beginner's cave, but there are several narrow, dangerous sections where people have required rescue in the past. So
to
that's
be fair,
why...
Nutty Putty sounds like it would be a beginner's cave. It sounds like, you know, the crazy names that give, like, the green slopes and skiing.
No, not familiar. I mean, I'm not a skier.
Yeah, but they're always just like easy way down or something, you know, like Nutty Putty. Yeah. Just like one of those fun little.
No, right. Nutty Putty sounds like a cave that I would actually be okay entering.
Yeah. Yep. Nope.
And then I read this story, so no. Not that I have a choice, which I'll come to later, but no. So, unfortunately, this proved to be such an expedition. Jones ended up getting wedged into an 18 by 10 inch L-shaped bend about 150 feet below the surface, known as Bob's Push.
This is reminding me a lot of the chimney episode.
Yeah, I guess I just really like talking about people getting wedged in
even
very
though
tiny
you
places.
Hate small spaces.
Well, that's because I'm so focused on it not happening to me that I read these stories and must tell them. Jones was a 6-foot, 190-pound man, and he got wedged such that he was pinched between rocks with his head below his feet. So he was upside down.
Yes, okay.
And search and rescue personnel were able to raise him from his initial position using some ropes and pulleys, but the anchor that they were using in the cave ceiling broke, probably because
it was made of clay.
Yes, it was made out of this clay that its name comes from. So the anchor broke free, and it caused Jones to slip back into his upside-down position. And more than 100 rescue workers arrived and worked over a 28-hour period trying to get him free. And all the time they were working, Jones was on the radio, telling his family jokes while they waited above. Even though he was upside down in this position that made it very difficult to breathe. So unfortunately, after about a day of being trapped, he lost consciousness and ended up passing away.
Okay.
Yeah. So terribly.
Terribly.
Yes.
But he did it telling jokes, sounds like.
Yeah. So I mentioned before that people had gotten stuck in Nutty Putty before. So about 5 years earlier, in 2004, two Boy Scouts had nearly lost their lives in the same area where John had been trapped. And they had become trapped within a week of each other. So in one of the cases, it took crews 14 hours to free the 16-year-old scout. He was a little bit smaller than John, 140 pounds and 5'7". And they used a complex series of pulleys to pull him out. And unfortunately, in John's case, it just didn't work out. So they were never able to recover John's body.
Okay.
And it remains inside Nutty Putty to this day.
Oh, wow.
And the last line of one of the main articles I used for this, I really liked. Now sealed up, Nutty Putty Cave serves as a natural memorial and gravesite to John Edward Jones. Yeah, so... after this incident, Nutty Putty Cave was closed to future expeditions. And also the article where I got all of my epidemiology for caving, this incident inspired the authors of that article.
Oh, okay.
So it was written by people at the University of Virginia, where John was a medical student.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, because there had been no extensive analysis of injuries involved with caving prior to that study.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
And also in 2016, a filmmaker, Isaac Halasima, produced and directed a full-length film about the life and failed rescue of John Jones called The Last Descent.
Oh.
So if we want a sad movie marathon, we could add that to the list.
That also reminds me a lot, we didn't cover this, but mining deaths and mining cave-ins would have been really interesting.
Well, we could do an episode on occupational.
We can do an episode on occupational. Yeah. So that would be really interesting because I think it's really relevant.
I'm going to add.
So I'm going to kind of switch directions from still talking about death, but like a slightly more random, interesting, kind of amusing type of death. So when I was looking at people that died from trees falling on them, I stumbled across people dying from being hit on the head by coconuts.
No.
Yes. So I'm doing this for two reasons. One, I found it because I was looking for falling trees. And two, I love coconut. It's like my Achilles heel. Like, coconut chocolates are my favorite. Coconut drinks are my downfall.
Yeah.
Like, I love coconut.
So you're talking about something you love, and I talked about something I fear.
Yes. And then when I Googled death by coconut...
Was it mostly allergic reactions?
It's actually funny. The first thing that popped up is actually this beer called Death by Coconut by Oscar Blues Brewing.
Is that a California company? It sounds familiar.
It's out of Colorado, and it is an Irish porter, but it apparently has like chocolate and coconut undertones.
So when are we going to Colorado?
I really, really want it.
We should.
I wanted it with every fiber of my being.
Let's go hiking apparently in Colorado. Seasonally, and have Death by Coconut.
It's seasonally available. Oh, so we need to make sure we figure out when. But yes, Death by Coconut is a Irish whiskey out of Colorado.
Loving it. Adding it to our bucket list.
So when did this all start? In 1984, in the Journal of Trauma, there was a study that came out that looked over 4 years of data, and they looked at people that got injured from falling coconuts. So these are injuries to the head, back, and shoulders in a hospital in Papua New Guinea. 2.5 of the admissions were due to coconuts. There were four head injuries from these that count for the whole 2.5%. Yeah. There aren't that many admissions, but two of them needed craniectomies.
What?
Two of them died instantly.
What? Oh, a craniectomy is where you remove part of the skull in order to relieve pressure on the brain.
Yeah. So pretty bad. And so why is it so bad? So mature coconuts, trees are 24 to 35 meters tall. So it's one, it's very high up there. And two, an unhusked coconut can weigh 1 to 4 kilos. So a blow to the head exceeding a metric ton is possible with the weight and the like force and the concentration of the impact.
Oh my gosh.
So the researcher, whose name is Bars, won an Ig Nobel for this. Do you know what an Ig Nobel is?
I have no idea.
Okay. So I know this cause they're often presented in Boston or okay. in Cambridge, which is where I went to college. It's the satiric prize that's awarded annually since the early 1990s, and they celebrate 10 unusual or trivial achievements in scientific research. And it's stated to aim to honor achievements that first make people laugh and then make them think.
This is my new dream, is to win an Ig Nobel.
I went to an Ig Nobel research thing, like present or like prize thing, and one of them was on like paper airplanes. Like, they're really random, but then they are research that is published somewhere. So this guy won an Ig Nobel for this, but this research spread, and they extrapolated this to deaths over the 4 years in this tiny country of Papua New Guinea. Coconuts kill 150 people per year
in Papua New Guinea.
No. They extrapolated this Papua New Guinea data to the world. But of course, there aren't as many coconut trees concentrated everywhere. Yeah. So I still couldn't find how many people actually die from coconuts every year.
Right.
But they then took this and extrapolated it out. And then in 2002, there was a shark expert who was trying to prove that sharks aren't that deadly. And they said that more people die every year from falling coconuts than from shark attacks. Because sharks kill about 5 people a year. Yeah. And they extrapolated to 150 people per year.
Right.
So coconuts are way more deadly than sharks.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that should be a t-shirt. Coconuts are deadlier than sharks.
This apparently led to Queensland, Australia removing coconut trees from its beaches in 2002.
Really? Oh, wow.
And there was like a lot of misreporting over time. Finally, in 2001, there was this, I guess, kind of little timeline off. But 2001, there was a study that showed that over a 5-year period, all skull fractures from falling fruit, they called it, were in children under the age of 10.
Oh.
So adult skulls were more resilient.
Yeah.
So historical reports of deaths from these dated back to the 1770s. The first one was 1777. King Tetui of Manjaya of the Cook Islands had a concubine that died apparently after getting hit in the head by a falling green nut. And then there's a lot of reports over time. In 1943, a U.S. Marine was killed in his sleep when he was struck in the head by a falling coconut on Guadalcanal.
Oh, no.
There was a lot of babies. So in 1952, a seven-month-old baby died when it was struck in the head by a coconut while being held by its mother.
Oh, no.
In 1973, a two-year-old girl was killed and her aunt was injured by a cluster of 57 coconuts falling on them.
What? How?
Which was Hawaii's first recorded fatality from falling coconuts.
What?
I don't know. Yep, it's crazy.
What? I need so much more about this tree.
And this went on and on. I'm like, I cut this list down extensively.
Yeah.
And then in December 1923, okay, and then there's other weird deaths associated with coconuts. So in 1923, in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, a man was killed because he was trying to open a coconut with the butt end of a loaded revolver. You can guess what happened. It discharged and shot the man in the abdomen. This is a really weird story. In 1930s in India, a boy was killed by a magic or an enchanted coconut. There was a teacher at his school that wanted to determine who stole a book. And they required each student to bring in a coconut bearing this religious symbol called an imam. One boy resisted touching this fruit, but he was forced to touch it, and then he contracted a high fever, fell into delirium, and died within an hour.
What?
And then there was a female goose-beaked whale that apparently ingested a coconut husk lodged in her intestine, and she died.
A whale?
A whale. In 1997, a production line manager in Kiev, Ukraine, drowned in a vat of coconut oil.
Well, if you're gonna go.
In 1944, Japanese troops used coconut bombs, which was where they take hand grenades and picnic acid. They hollow out coconuts and put that in there and then seal it off. And then they would throw those at American GIs. And then finally, there are three reported deaths that I found of coconut trees falling on people. So circling back to the beginning.
Yeah, of course.
One in Malaysia in 1992, one in the Philippines in 2006, and again in Malaysia in 2011. So coconut trees also kill people.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I wanted to mention was there's a lot of references to coconuts in pop culture. So there's a lot of video games, Donkey Kong 3, Kirby, Sonic the Hedgehog, all involve coconuts. They're in like collecting coconuts for things or getting killed by coconuts falling on them.
Oh yeah, Donkey Kong takes me back.
There was a song by Bob Gibson and Shel Silverstein called Killed by a Coconut, where they talked about different ways coconuts could kill you.
Shel Silverstein.
Yep. Oh. Of course, in Gilligan's Island, they have a lot of coconut themes things, and one of which was getting killed by a coconut.
Mm.
And then finally, there is this poem by Frederick Seidel called Coconut that I wanted to read for you. A coconut can fall and hit you in the head. And if it falls from high enough, can kind of knock you dead. Dead beneath the coconut palms, that's the life for me. And I felt like that would be a good way to end my my coconut death saga. But yeah, it was one of those things I ran into and I was like, I have to do it. I have to do it.
Oh.
So fun. All right, Sochmeets.
Sochmeets. Okay. So, if you enjoyed this and any of our other episodes, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. It's how we get boosted up on the various podcasting platforms and other people learn about us.
You can visit our website at deadmendotellpodcast.com, where we link to all our sources and our episode guide.
On Twitter, we're at deadmendo.
On Insta, we're at the Dead Tell Tales.
And our Facebook page is Dead Men Do Tell Tales Podcast.
And as always, please send us an email if you have questions, comments, concerns, anything through our website or directly to thedeadtelltales@gmail.com.
And our opening music is Introducing the Pre-Roll by Lee Rosevere, who you can find on SoundCloud.
Thanks, guys. Hope you enjoyed the episode.
Yep. Bye.